Already, we are here after a long time. We're sorry, with a really annoying song. We're also sorry to talk about the Poodle book. We're not sorry about that. We have a Marco endeavor this time, which is pretty exciting. His books are usually pretty funny, and this one was no different. The level of absurdity in this book, cover to cover, is pretty top notch. It's pretty good, like, ridiculousness. That's happening. I mean, the fact that on the cover, when Marco is morphing into the poodle, he's also morphing the bows.
The bows that Euclid wears. I mean, if I were a math teacher who had a poodle and named it Euclid, I feel like adding a bow on the ear is sort of like demasculinizing. Mm-hmm. That's not a word.
That's anyway, okay, she's a math teacher.
The point is, you can't morph clothing.
No.
This has been well established.
It's true.
And yet.
And yet, no one told the illustrator, but that's okay. We still like the illustrator. We're not here to dog on him. I'm sorry. This is three apologies in about a minute of podcasting. We'll get to the good stuff. So yeah, let's jump right in and talk about what was happening in the proposal, which, again, Marco book, with the comedy, there's always a little layer of tragedy running undercurrent. There's always tragedy with all these kids, but Marco has the definite stark contrast, I would say, between the bad stuff and the good stuff. And in this one, the bad stuff is largely to do with his home life. His dad has started dating his math teacher.
Actual nightmare.
Yeah, which is, you know, that's definitely... That's a trope, number one, and then it's really happening to Marco, and he hates it. And of course, the added level that Animorphs always does with their tropes, it's kind of cool that, I say cool, but it's interesting. It's always interesting that there's a deeper level because, yes, this is the typical my dad's dating again sort of horror story, but the added Animorphs twist is that Marco knows that his mom maybe is alive. It's possible. And of course, also, she is the host body for Visser 1, and so even if she were alive, it's not like she would be able to, you know, run home to Marco and his dad with open arms and, you know, have the same kind of family again. So there's a lot of pain, I think, in a lot of this. And because of this situation, and because of Marco's inability to cope with this, it starts showing up in his morphing. And he starts morphing a second animal if he's not concentrated on his morphing or if he's in emotional distress. And so that poses a challenge basically throughout the whole book. That's sort of the backdrop for the actual plot that's happening, which we get another three-name celebrity in this one, much like the JTT analog, whose name I can never remember. Jeremy Jason McColl. I got it. It just came to me. So the three-name celebrity in this case is William Roger Tennant, who a little bit sounds like he should be fighting in the Revolutionary War, but he's actually like... What would you say? A Dr. Phil?
Yeah, he's like a guru.
Yeah,
I would say a white dude. Pseudo-Eastern, like, yeah. Everything's chill, guys, type guru.
Not really Dr. Phil, but maybe the level of fame that Dr. Phil has and recognizability.
Right. He's got, like, a TV show you tune in to get, like, your chill on and tell, you know, let him tell you, like, how to live your life.
Yeah.
If he were around now, he'd probably have, like, a line of yoga balls or something.
Yeah, something. Yeah, probably. I could see that. So he, on his television one day, as part of his advice to chill out, man, is to join the sharing, which is, of course, a big red flag that he is, in fact, a controller. And then this is one of the negative, you know, possibilities for the Animorphs is when people who are in high positions of power or spheres of influence become controllers, then that's what the Yerkes game plan is, and then that is a bad thing for the Animorphs because he can sort of cast a wide net and bring in a lot of controllers willingly, more or less.
Yeah, I mean, if Lin-Manuel Miranda told me to join The Sharing, I probably would.
Oh, and he would join a group called The Sharing. That's the thing, is it's such a deceptive name about, like, hugs.
Right? Yeah. The dude whole spiel is, like, he's talking to some call-in person who's, like, you know, feeling lonely, doesn't have any friends, like, trying to, you know, meet new people, like, I think maybe, like, she's middle-aged, and, like, her husband died or something like that, and he's like, you know, this built-in community is waiting for you, and also Yerkes.
Yeah. It's interesting you bring that up, though, because, like, sort of preying on vulnerable people, and I think you could totally consider Marco's dad to be somebody that easily could have called in and been, like, a target audience person for William Roger Tennant, given his wife's death and the grieving process that he's had and being a single dad with Marco and stuff like that. So there's a little bit of a, it's not like an overt connection that's made in the book, but there's, you know, a little bit of a similarity, I think, there for sure. So the question is, how do they take out William Roger Tennant? And the idea is to publicly humiliate him and discredit him. Because, so remove the influence that he has, because they don't have any other choice, really. That's how you dethrone somebody.
Celebrities, you embarrass them. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, this is, or actually fortunately, probably this is pre-era of the sex tape.
Yes.
So that's not really a weapon at their disposal.
He has a toupee.
He does. Spoilers, he has a toupee.
Spoilers, he has a toupee.
A ponytail.
A ponytail toupee. For his ponytail, I always imagine, actually, for him, I imagine a little bit the Steve Martin character in Baby Mama. I don't know if you remember the Steve Martin character in Baby Mama, but he's
I don't
like...
I think I saw it.
It's, you're not missing much. I prefer the commentary to Baby Mama more than to the movie Baby Mama. But anyways, Steve Martin is like a CEO of like a whole grain, like crunchy, all-natural company who is very like comedically that stereotype. So
I thought it was supposed to be, I thought he was supposed to be like... like John Tesh.
John Tesh, wisdom for your daily life.
Yeah, that was what I thought of.
You know.
Super 90s.
Yeah. Ooh, but speaking of 90s, how many 90s references were just
this
littered
book is like 90s bingo
on the pages of this? But I think partly because Marco is sort of the king of pop culture references. He's a little more entrenched than the others. But yeah, from the shout outs to UPN, I mean, he name drops Doc Martens on the first page. We have, what else is in here that is a 90s reference?
Isn't there a conversation with him and Axe about TV?
Yeah, well, Axe talks about these messages, which I always...
Right, these messages.
Axe has picked up so much.
You don't really see that on TV anymore.
No, you really don't.
Return after these messages.
No. Yeah, there's a good... we'll get to the ultimate 90s reference in a minute because it's a plot point. So how exactly are they going to take down William Roger Tennant? Well, they first case his house, the joint, if you will. And it turns out that William Roger Tennant is like an animal lover and has 10 cockatiels. So, of course, they decide to, two of them, Rachel and Marco, of all people.
I would not send them on a mission together.
I would not either. And predictably, it goes south with those two. They are close to hearing some, like, details, but then Marco poops on William Roger Tennant's, like, notes. And then William Roger Tennant threatens to kill him, or at least the Yerk in his head. And so they do discover that the Yerk in his head is slightly unhinged. And so they
can... And also not an animal lover.
Also not an animal lover, no. So they can capitalize on that. But the problem is, one, getting them in front of a camera would put, like, a wide audience. And number two, they have to put one of themselves in danger. They have to make him want to kill them. So that's problematic. You know, you could die. But Marco's still having trouble with his morphs. He can't control his cockatiel morph. And so he keeps chirping during the phone call and then poops on his paper. So he was a little bit of an annoyance.
Is this the... This is really the only second time that we've seen, like, morphing ability affected by really anything. Because the first one would be Rachel with the crocodile.
Yeah, the allergy.
Which is an allergy. Which, who's allergic to, like, a crocodile? You can be allergic to, like, dogs and stuff.
I guess so.
Anyway, and then this one is, like, a physical effect of the emotional state, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
It's like when you're, like, really, really stressed out and then you don't get your period for 3 months.
That's true. Well, that's the thing, is I feel like even if you weren't, even if Marco didn't have the morphing power, I feel like he would have some kind of physical manifestation of his emotional, like, constipation, because he is not expressing himself. And honestly, like, of the other Animorphs, I would probably peg Rachel as somebody else who would also have a similar problem of, like, emotional repression.
It explodes in other ways.
Exactly.
Sometimes literally by forcing your body to create an entire new crocodile.
Exactly.
And sometimes by changing you into a skiter or possibly a skunk.
Or a Pooh Bear.
All of his mashups are pretty classic.
The Skiter or Spunk is truly the stuff of nightmares, though. That sounds horrific.
Yeah, the way that the other people react, like, that's how I would have reacted.
And he gambles with it. He's also a talking, like, a telepathically talking.
Yeah, he just, like, flings it out the window and is like, well, screw this. I'm already, like, kind of boned, so I'm just gonna start talking to these humans.
Yeah, Marco was a little bit reckless in this book. Which, it's not the first time that we've seen Marco's recklessness, and it wasn't to negative effect here. We were more focused on his, sort of, on the mission and his emotional issues. So, the second opportunity to try and defame William Roger Tennant is at a banquet wherein he is receiving an award. And so they want to morph roaches and enter and go in his salad so that when he sees the roaches in his salad,
that's
he would freak out.
Gross plan.
That is a disgusting plan.
And it gets even grosser because, like...
Well, the Skiter happens.
The Skiter happens, but then one of the Animorphs, like... They, like, crawl on him.
They do. That's the plan B. But so this book is full of failures. Everything in every plan in this book goes haywire until the very end. And even that one goes haywire also. So the cockatiel stakeout ends in Marco's near murder because he crapped on a desk as a bird. And then the banquet has two parts. The first part is the roach plan. That does not work because Marco can't control his spider morph. He was going to be a spider in the bowl, which is just like the disgusting cherry on top of a nasty salad anyways.
I'm really not clear why they thought that this was like the best plan, because their whole, like, the hinge of it is like, oh, you know, a way to totally discredit, like, a hippie guru type is to forcing them to enact animal abuse, which is pretty solid. Like, yeah, you can't come back from that, as we have seen Michael Vick.
True.
And he wasn't even a hippie guru type.
That's
he
true.
Was a football player.
That's true.
The point is, if you hit animals in public or if you hurt them in any way, people are not going to love you for it.
Yeah.
But nobody's going to blame you for killing a cockroach that's on a table in your food.
No, that's true.
So, like, just because he freaks out, like, it wasn't a very neat, like, enactment of
that is true.
Plan.
I did think it was interesting that...
Because nobody's going to feel bad because you killed an insect.
No. Least of all,
even if you're a Buddhist.
And in your food.
In your food.
All of us are foodists. That's the most important thing. No bugs in food. So what I thought was interesting, though, is that there weren't any discussions in this book. Like, usually a lot of the books have, like, barn talks of making decisions. Yeah, they skipped over those in this book. They just jumped right past them and went into all of the plans that, of course, went bottom up at some point. I wonder if the Ghost Rider had written a barn discussion, if, like, she would have written herself into the corner of, like, wait a minute, like, cockroach isn't a salad.
It'll make you act wacky, but nobody's gonna, like, it's not gonna totally discredit you for acting like a normal human would.
True. Absolutely true. And of course, it does go haywire because Marco's morph goes haywire and the roaches go to the wrong plate, the wrong table. This is a truly 90s detail that is not necessary, and yet it happened in the book. The roaches are delivered to the place setting of one Hansen brother. Is it Zach?
I think it's Zach.
The youngest? Who for some reason is attending this event.
Yeah, I mean, if some sort of humanitarian award was given to a pop culture figure in the mid to late 90s, I don't see that Hansen would have been invited. I mean, I can think of other, maybe even musical figures who might have been, like Jewel, maybe.
Jewel would have been a good one.
But Hansen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was bewildering. I had forgotten. I think you remembered, yeah. When we talked about this, like, that this was on the horizon, you laughed a lot. So I assumed that you remembered.
It's wacky.
I knew nothing. And so when I turned to the page where Hansen appeared, I had to do a double take and make sure I read it again clearly. Of course, while I was cackling through the whole thing, because why not? And again, so kudos to the ghostwriter for just throwing in Hansen.
Writing Hansen fanfic and getting it published.
Basically, that's what this is. And you know, Hansen was cool about it. Their public reputation was probably fine. I think they left, and rightfully so.
Yeah, there's like one line about Hansen leaving the banquet.
Well, the amazing thing too is that like Zach Hansen starts screaming because there are roaches in his dish, and then all of the Hansen fangirls start screaming, and so then there's just like several lines where everyone is screaming like back and forth at each other.
I think even the Animorphs are, like, screaming in Thoughtspeak. Like, Axe is screaming. It's a very silly scene.
Oh, it's amazing. So, they have enough time, though, at the banquet to salvage their attempts. And they make a second attempt to discredit him while they have this public forum. Which is honestly maybe not the best public forum. Was it televised? This banquet?
I mean, it would. I suspect it would have been now.
Yeah.
Since he was getting an award, probably.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I'm not sure what channel it would have been broadcast on.
Posterity for himself. But so their second plan is to have Axe morph a human so that Axe can be a human as a waiter and they can make sure that the plate's delivered correctly, I think, or they can get close to him. And Axe can still use Thoughtspeak, because Marco stayed as a human when he messed up his morph, and then nobody could communicate with him because he was human. So, Marco and Axe are waiters, and everyone else is fleas, and they get under William Roger Tennant's toupee and bite him. That's the grand plan. Bite him to try and get him to, like, lose his cool. And he falters. He's delivering a speech while they're all just, like, being disgustingly...
He starts, like, sweating and looking really strained, but he doesn't lose it.
No, he makes it through. And, like, a true professional. So, well done, guys.
It's really gross.
It is really gross. I'm glad that the narration was not with any of the fleas on his head that, like, Cassie or Marco or Massey or Rachel or
Jake.
Jake
says something like, this is the grossest thing we've ever done.
I think, I can't imagine Rachel going along with this without having some kind of obnoxious comment. So the banquet is a bust. This is now three different plans that are really ineffectual and also kind of gross. Like, have some sort of, like... silly, gross thing happen in them. And after that, it's a little bit difficult. Marco takes matters into his own hands and morphs Euclid, the annoying poodle, and then just, like, takes it upon himself to follow William Roger Tennant around and harass him. And, like...
I mean, if you've ever met a miniature poodle... They do tend to be pretty annoying.
He, like, pees on his shoes and bites his pant leg and, like, bites out the butt of his trousers. Like, classic slapstick stuff that Marco's really orchestrating here. These really official missions. But the problem with that is that it's not televised. It's just sort of personal harassment about the poodle. So, they do find an opportunity where William Roger Tennant is going to be on live TV because... The stakes are raised when we find out that he might get a TV station, go to a new network, I guess, from local TV to the UPN.
Mm-hmm.
You all remember the UPN. So they wait for him at the news station. They want to find an opportunity before cameras are rolling so that he's not on, quote-unquote, to incite some kind of, like, violence against animals scene, and then Axe will be in the control booth starting a live feed to run it to TV. So in order to do this, they're going to use Marco again. Not smart guys. After all of his,
somebody,
like,
somebody else acquire the poodle. It's not like
seriously.
That
seriously. And so he starts to morph the poodle, and then halfway through starts morphing a polar bear. And so, of course, the mighty Pooh Bear.
The Pooh Bear.
Which, again, is hilarious. And he gets lost in the morph and has to be brought back. And we should stop before we get to the resolution here, because there's a very important conversation that happens that deals with Marco's emotions before this sort of culmination. And of course, anytime anyone in the Animorphs has emotions, who do we call?
Cassie, the emotional wrangler.
Exactly. Cassie, our resident whale lover and like tree hugger and like earth mama. Cassie comes in. Cassie goes over to Marco's and handles him pretty well, I think. In the end, she's not the one who can get like through to him. But for a non-crisis situation, she sits him down and sort of tries to talk to him and get him to talk a little bit about his feelings, which he does a little bit. He opens up about it. And she sort of says that when she's treating animals, she would get really angry about injured animals that have received their injuries from sort of human cruelty or carelessness or, you know, ignorance or something like that, and that it would sort of interfere with her ability to treat the animal and to treat the issue. And her dad would always tell her to deal with what is and not with what should be. And so that's sort of pertinent for Marco, because all of the situations that Marco is facing, none of that should, by any stretch of the imagination, should be happening to a middle school kid. But unfortunately, it's his reality and he has to deal with it. And one thing that I like that Marco pointed out as well is that when the kids aren't Animorphs, they can go home and be kids. And it reminds me of that conversation that Jake had on the swings with his grandfather or grandmother or somebody. Somebody old in his family, like a relative, an older relative. And, you know, they would talk about, like, stargazing and being a kid. And then Jake, of course, knows. And we know that Jake has so much responsibility with the weight of the planet on his shoulders and that the stars are not magical for him anymore. So you get this, like, really nice, like, tragic contrast. But even more tragic is the idea that when Marco leaves the Animorphs and goes home, he can't be a kid because after his mom died, his dad shut down and he is an only child. So he kind of had to step up and pseudo, like, be an adult and, like, have his act together. And none of the Animorphs really have to do that. Rachel has some responsibility being the oldest sister with divorced parents. Like, that's a little bit true. And all of them have to grow up very quickly to a certain extent, but Marco's situation is definitely a little set apart, I think, from some of the others, or at least he feels that way for sure. Which I thought was interesting that he brought that up. And what else happens in that scene? Is there something else that we should, like, mention? Because it's a fairly pivotal scene. And we talked earlier a little bit before we started recording that Marco's really hard on himself. And he doesn't allow himself to have these feelings because I think there's a little bit of, like,
I don't fit in with how he sees himself, like, within their group, how he prefers to be seen as being, you know, wise guy or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And he thinks that he should be able to deal with it. And he thinks that he is by not dealing with it. So, yes. Of course it goes exploding in his face. And it happens one last time in the TV studio when he morphs the Pooh Bear. And Cassie tries to connect with him and sort of call back to the conversation that they had. But ultimately it's Jake who basically yells at him. Jake tells him that he needs to sort of get his butt together or in gear and, deal with it. And sorry, and that sucks, but you need to deal with it right now. And even sort of quotes Marco back to himself that, like, life is, kind of either a comedy or a tragedy, but you can choose to laugh at it, even if it is a tragedy. And so that sort of snaps Marco out of it. And he's able to morph into the poodle again and successfully earn a beating from...
Yeah, he annoys old tenant who, yeah, basically, like, to the point where the guy does exactly what they want him to do. He snaps and I think he hits Marco with, like, a electrical cord.
Yes.
Not great.
That's so, and that's like so over the top. Ooh.
And eventually he like picks him up and I think like chokes him.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, yes, he is on live TV.
Yeah.
And I think Axe even does the "Here's Marco" thing. He's been watching Johnny Carson.
He's picking it up so much, so quickly. And they eventually, Cassie and Rachel, I think, are wolves in the wings to come in and make sure that Marco's okay. And I think they eventually do bust in.
But the whole TV crew was like, actually, why don't you, like, try Fox? We don't think we can run with you for this one, dude.
Exactly. Which I wondered if that was, like, a little jab at Fox. I wasn't sure. I think in today's time, it would definitely read that way, but I'm not sure about in 1998 or 99. So they're able to sort of get out of it. Marco snaps out of it. They ruin this guy's reputation. I'm, you know, mildly curious as to what he would do in the future, but I don't think they ever, like...
Yeah, I don't think he ever makes a reappearance of, like, where are they now?
That would be amazing. I want to do a Where Are They Now?
The fake celebrities in the Animorphs.
Yes, I want that so badly. We do know that Jeremy Jason McCool moved to Uzbekistan.
Yes.
We do know that. But we could have so much fun with everybody else. And then the real celebrities also, like Hanson.
Yes. Who I believe are still recording.
They are. I believe that is true, definitely. So in the end also we get a little more resolution after the plot resolution. We get some emotional resolution and a little bit of like a fast forwarding because Marco basically gave his blessing to his dad to marry Miss Robinette, Nora, the math teacher, which was dropped in at some point in another issue where Marco was like not dealing. His dad asked for his permission and Marco just kind of like got angry and walked out and knew that he was being unreasonable, but like also wouldn't accept his feelings. Like, and I think that happens, to go a little bit, like, emotional psychology for a minute. I think that, like, a lot of people who are very aware of what they think they should be feeling, they skip the part of processing their emotions and go straight to, like, I know that I don't need to feel this way, or I know that it's not helpful for me to feel this way. And they skip the important part of just feeling it and getting it over with, and then actually being able to organically move past it. And that's something that Marco definitely does in this book that I think is very relatable, and very recognizable, because I think we sort of all have that idea of wanting to be okay with things and wanting to be better. And like you have to sort of go through the motions, because that would imply an inauthenticity to it, but you have to actually go through it in order to achieve and earn that at the end result. And so Marco does in the end, after sort of the talk with Cassie and then getting the reminder of his identity from Jake. And Nora and Marco's dad get married.
Marco wears a tux and makes a James Bond joke.
Of course. Why wouldn't he? He is the best man indeed, which I think Rachel makes jokes about.
Yes.
Classic Marco and Rachel. I still really just want Marco, Rachel, and Cassie to go on, like... I would love, like...
I also.
Just the adventures of those three going on missions and Cassie not giving correct numbers for phone numbers. Like, I really want that. And then they end on a cliffhanger. The very end. Marco gets home and the phone rings. And then he lets the machine get it, and the machine, a voice comes over the machine and says, Marco, if you're there, pick up. And it is his mother's voice. So, of course...
That means the next book is Visser, right?
The next book is Visser. So we switch over to Visser next, which I don't remember having read.
I know I read it, but I don't have a lot of memory of it.
Either.
For some reason, it wasn't one of the Megamorphs that I reread a lot.
Is it a backstory about Marco's mom?
I think so.
Okay, because sometimes as a child I was
I'm pretty sure Visser 3 is on the cover. So I think it's about, like, politics, which is fine with me.
Well, see, as a child that was not really great with me. So I had a hard time venturing into the extended book sort of world if it didn't directly involve the kids coming with. And as an adult, I have a greater appreciation for, like, the Horpager Chronicles and, like, Elfanger's Secret, stuff like that. Like, I think I appreciate them much more as an adult. But as an early teen, tween age, I was like, you're losing me.
Where is the entire viewpoint
exactly cast? Like, yeah. This world building and backstory like developing is losing me. So we will come back with Visser, and I'm curious to see what I think about that as an adult now. Anything else that we want to touch on with Marco and the poodles? Just the one poodle, really. Although when he morphed it, then there's two poodles.
Oh, Euclid. Marco has to live with you.
I know.
Euclid doesn't like Marco.
I don't remember what happens, but I'm curious to see is this a reread for me? Is it? I don't remember what happens, and I'm curious. Like, of course, the timing of Marco's mom leaving a message on the answering machine coincides right after Marco's dad gets married. Like, of course. So I'm curious to see how that plays out, because I honestly didn't remember that Marco's dad gets remarried. So, again, did I read these books ever? We'll see.
It's a vast conspiracy.
I think maybe. We appreciate you sticking with us and listening to our thoughts and rambles about number 35, The Proposal. We also appreciate you sticking with us using the Baha Men's Who Let the Dogs Out for the bumper music on this podcast. Sorry again. Go listen to something else so it's not stuck in your head immediately after you listen to this. Just rinse it right out. But we couldn't pass up such a 90s song. That song might not be from the 90s.
I want to say it came out when we were in, like, 8th grade. So maybe 2000 or 1999?
Let's find out. Let's consult Google.
2000.
That is a Y2K song.
Oh, dear.
All right. So forgive us. It's close enough. It's fine. So please come back and join us for Visser. And thank you for listening. Get back, Ruffy. Bash, Ruffy. Get back, you flea-infested mongrel.